Blog Talk Radio.
I stand before you tonight because all across America, something is stirring. What the naysayers don't understand is that this election has never been about me. It's about you. You.
Hi, everybody. I am Jason Easley, and this is, once again, Politicus Radio. Boy, do we have a good show for you tonight. Tonight, we're going to be talking about Barack Obama's fundraising, which, as you know, was, holy smokes, that's a big pile of money, versus Sarah Palin's fundraising, which is, what the hell happened to Sarah Palin's money? With us tonight, as usual, the extremely talented, extremely professional, extremely captivating, engrossing, and engaging writer from PoliticusUSA.com, ladies and gentlemen, Sarah Jones. Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Jason. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, you're basically, this spot on the show is going to be called the Sarah Jones spot, because you have defined it and you occupy it.
Don't tell people that they might.
Often imitated but never duplicated, ladies and gentlemen, Sarah Jones. How's that for an intro?
That's wonderful, thank you. But I'm blushing now,
well,
so thank you.
Well, luckily they can't hear your blushing over the radio.
Small favor.
So let's jump right into this thing, because we're going to try to stay at a half an hour tonight as hard as we can. We're going to do our best to stick to 30 minutes. The first topic is the big news from yesterday that Obama for America, raised $86 million in the first quarter. The really stunning numbers in my mind were the campaign had 552,462 donors who made 680,000 donations, 98% of them were for $250 or less, and the average donation was $69. We've heard a lot of talk about Obama's trouble with the left and Obama's losing his base and, oh, what if the left doesn't turn out for Obama and Obama could be a one-term president if he doesn't get the left behind him. So my first question to you is, have reports of Obama's demise with the left been greatly exaggerated?
I think, like all things in the media, they were greatly exaggerated. I think the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and those are the folks you hear the loudest. But obviously, they don't represent the base, and they're certainly not the majority. I think his fundraising absolutely makes that point, and it kind of makes you wonder, where are all these people? They were exceptionally motivated. And, I mean, these fundraising numbers are just amazing. And where are all those voices? Maybe those folks aren't engaged in politics, but they really support this president. And there's a lot of theories you could go off with this. But, yeah, it was really interesting. And, obviously, he has a large base. It may not be the far left, but he does have a very large, sustainable base.
What's surprising to me is that these people, in order to get people to donate, usually you get the most engaged people politically, the hardest of the hardcore supporters, are the ones who open their wallets and donate. These are just phenomenally large numbers of people giving to his campaign. It really does make you think that there are a whole other separate block of voters out there who maybe aren't Democratic voters. They aren't Democrats first, but they're Obama voters first.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I also think we have to take a look at how we define the far left. It seems that movement has been hijacked by folks who don't always seem to represent what liberal values are, and we saw that last December when Obama was compromising with the GOP to pass unemployment benefit extensions for the poor and the folks who are suffering, which is obviously a liberal value. It was rather surprising to me at that point. I think I started wondering, maybe these folks are not liberals. Maybe there's something else that they stand for, and I'm not really sure that's been identified. And that might be another reason why a lot of the liberal faction is upset at being represented by folks who whose loudest claim has really been their dissatisfaction with the president.
Yeah, I think part of that is cable news. You know, the voices that do nothing but bash Obama, they're the ones who get put on television. Nobody wants to talk to an Obama supporter. For a segment. I guess that's boring television. You'd rather have some blogger come on and play the mainstream media's role that they've designated for bloggers and other writers, that you're supposed to come on and be hyper-partisan and fuel conflict and make good television. I just think that people who support this president and can look at this rationally and logically, and people who are very well-informed and understand the procedural elements that are going on and why it's been so hard to implement an agenda, those people don't have their voices heard as loudly or as often. At least that's what I think.
I think that's true. Yeah, and I think those people are fairly frustrated at not being heard, and we see that a lot in the comment section of our website. We hear it from our own writers, actually, and I just wanted to, I know you want to move on and keep this short, but I do want to add in that one of the things that I'm going to hijack this from you one way or the other. One of the things that really makes me think a lot, and I haven't figured out the answer to this yet, but to me it looks like when I look at what Obama's doing, when I read his books, and when I look at the way that he governs, it looks to me like he's using an appearance of being a moderate to shift the country to the left in ways that aren't radical, but they're really important. They get to liberal values. He is constantly bringing up issues of human rights and civil rights and moving those issues into the center. And when they become the center, that to me is a long-term paradigm shift. It's the country moving a little bit to the left, which is something I think that everyone, including, you know, the folks that are upset with him, I think that that's hopefully what they want as well. Maybe they don't see it that way. Maybe they do see it, but it's just not enough change. I don't know. But I had to get that in there because it fascinates me.
What's interesting is you watch this dynamic play out, and it just seems like no matter what this president does, there's going to be certain people within his own party that aren't satisfied. And it really makes you wonder, as far as this country isn't, it's often portrayed in the media and in writing and in thought as either a left or right country. In reality, the country in collective is a lot like a person. Every human being has some things they're more conservative on, some things they're more liberal on, some things they really don't care about as much, and some things that they're ambivalent to, and they can go either way. That's what this country is. So by to build on your point, what Obama's doing essentially is picking out the low-hanging fruit, let's say don't ask, don't tell, which the country had swung on long ago and was in favor of doing. He's picking out those things that the country's ready to move leftward on, and that's what he's doing. Is it a little too cautious? It's really much too cautious probably for the far left movement who wants their agenda done their way now. But for the country as a whole, it's probably the best way to bring about change in our current environment, to build upon your point.
Yeah, well, long-term sustainable change. I mean, if he could go in there and change all this stuff, and if he got ahead of the country, then when the next Republican was in office, they would just go in and reverse everything. So is he too cautious? I don't know. That could be debated, but I don't think you can get too far ahead of public opinion and think that that change is sustainable.
Yeah, I think a lot of these people, they have that echo chamber where they only get their information from sources which agree with them, so they tend not to see the full picture. They, like the Tea Party, they tend to react emotionally before they react intellectually. And that's where I get, you've heard it, I've heard it, the Obama griping about Obama, the backlash against Obama. It's almost like an emotional
I've heard it. you can't be on the internet and not be aware of that. I mean, it's everywhere.
And it's always emotionally based. what he promised this, like he personally promised he was going to do this. Well, you know, he promised this, but the political realities of the situation dictate that he can't act unilaterally. And if his fellow Democrats didn't come with him, then those things aren't going to happen. Or if the Republicans obstruct him, those things aren't going to happen. It's a harder hill. It's a taller hill to climb.
It is. And you hit on a few things there that are important. I mean, for me, I can't speak, obviously, I can only speak for myself. As you point out, we're all different. We're all comprised of different values that come together, and they don't fall into one ideology. They are kind of, you know, spread out, and it just depends on what things are most important to you, how you vote. But for me, I don't want a president who is expanding the powers of the executive office. It's something that was very disturbing under Bush. And if you think about, you know, the 19th century liberalism, what that meant, and that's something that always surprises me when I hear that from these folks. Well, he needs to do this and that via executive order. And there are always going to be some executive orders he has to sign, but it's a matter of how many and in what way and why he's using them. And then those things matter to me. I don't want to see someone, because it doesn't matter, do I like this president? Yes, and I do trust him, but I don't trust any human being with absolute power or too much power. And I think, you know, we all know that anybody that you give too much power to, it's way too tempting. And even if they manage to handle it somewhat well, the next person that comes into office, you have no guarantee that they're going to be able to do that. So that's a big issue for me, and I do disagree with them on that. Definitely. But to your other point, I think when people are making an emotional argument, what disturbs me, what I see on the internet that really bothers me the most is a lot of name-calling instead of debate. And, you know, not everybody needs to be informed and has to debate based on great policy knowledge or even accuracy. I mean, it's fine. You're an American citizen, you have every right to have your opinion. Everyone has the right to have their opinion and voice it. But when you're claiming that you're right about something, and, you know, either left or right, which both happen to seem to agree that this president is evil incarnate, when you make that argument, and the only way you can make it is with name-calling, you know, I would like to see an appeal to a little bit of moderation and some real, maybe a move towards civility, because it gets really old saying all that. But at any rate, and I don't think those are, obviously you're not making a valid argument when the only thing you can say to somebody is you're a name. I won't repeat the name, but I'm not sure they're fit. But anyway, you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those things where, and we're going to have to leave this here in a minute or two and move on. It's one of those things where you want these people who think this president is the worst president ever, not dropping any hints, but if you read the Politico Show, say you'll know who we're talking about. These people who think this, you just want to sit them down, look them in the eye, and say, do you really think your agenda would be better served under a Republican president?
Yeah, but I've tried that. But I've tried that, and it gets you nowhere, because then they basically feel like you're fear-mongering them to support this president. Why can't they have the president that they want?
You don't have to support this president, but you can't call this president the worst president ever, because it automatically infers that any other president would be better. That makes George W. Bush better. You know, that makes various Republicans better. And if you're a liberal or a progressive, the worst thing that can happen to your agenda is a Republican in the White House.
But that goes back to what I just, you know, the first thing I was talking about, which is I'm not sure actually what platform or agenda these folks have, because it doesn't look liberal to me. It looks more radical.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see, I mean, when you look at the liberal platform and you talk about human rights and you talk about workers' rights, you know, some of these folks are calling union members thugs. I mean, that's not, to me, the liberal platform. It's not the Democratic platform. So I'm not sure that calling them liberals or even the far left is actually accurate.
I think some of these folks have a non-political personal agenda that supersedes any sort of ideology or partisanship, and I think that's what you're hinting at in a not so vague way.
Well, no, I mean, when you look at the Tea Party and what we talked about, their Ayn Rand, you know, taking that movement, that's not a political ideology. It's maybe a philosophy, but really more of a movement. They're using that to brand themselves with something that makes no sense. It's not politically appropriate. You know, they only pick the things that they want out of it, so it's not even really a platform. So that's kind of what I'm talking about. It's like when you go through and you pick and choose something, a different issue, then it changes. When your values change based on the situation, you know, that's what goes back to the unemployment benefit extension. If your values keep changing, you obviously really don't stand for that. So the question is, what do you stand for? Maybe you're just, I don't know.
Go ahead. I think the last word on this has to be that some of these people are substituting a belief system for an ideology, and ideologies and belief systems are going to be very closely related, but when you're talking about a belief system, and when that belief system becomes personalized, as in, I believe this person is, it becomes very dangerous and very destructive and very detrimental.
I think that's
where we're sitting with some people on both sides, left and right.
Yeah.
But we have to move on. We have to move on to one of our second subjects of the night, Sarah Palin's fundraising. Sarah PAC released their fundraising numbers. She raised a grand total of less than $1.6 million. Less than $1.6 million. I don't have exactly a bad number right in front of me. I had her spending number for me.
$1.562 million.
And she spent $1.592 million. She only raised less than $1.6 million. And there's a lot of talk about Palin, and basically fueled by Palin herself, that she's going to be jumping into the 2012 presidential race. She's teasing, she's hyping. What did these fundraising numbers? Did anything in these numbers actually surprise you?
Well, Jason, to be honest, I'm still in shock that we're discussing Sarah Palin as a possible presidential candidate. So it shocks me that people would send money to her after all of this time and the way that the money has been spent in her PAC, which is not a president. You know, obviously she hasn't announced yet, so this is just her Sarah PAC, but they send all this money to her, and she continues to burn through it at an amazing rate, and the money is not spent on the reason she says she stepped down from quit her governorship early. She isn't spending on conservative issues or Republican candidates. The majority of the money is spent on political consultants and travel for her. So I'm surprised that people send money to her, and I haven't really gotten over that part, to be shocked at the, you know, to see that anyone sends money to her is surprising to me. But am I surprised that her fundraising was this low? I guess I am, because her supporters are very vocal, and they've really made a huge push. I mean, she, with this this documentary that came out on her, the Undefeated, they were kind of trying to make a fundraising push by offering a copy of that DVD with a $100 contribution, obviously hoping to get these numbers to some level that made her a viable candidate. But you have to ask, I mean, the whole reason she has any legitimacy in the political dialogue is because people say she's a great fundraiser for the GOP, yet we know that her likability polling is absolutely horrid. And the country as a whole doesn't like her. I know the far right likes her a lot. The evangelical base likes her. The Tea Party likes her. But the country as a whole doesn't. And I think the after the blood libel video, after the Arizona shootings, that really kind of cinched the deal for her. And I know she's been trying to overcome that with positive publicity ever since then, but it just hasn't taken off. So I am surprised. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, please, I'm sorry to interrupt you. You are surprised.
No, go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to read you a statement, and you see if you could tell me what's missing. Quote, Sarah Pack more than doubled the amount we raised during this compared to the same period in 2009. It's 2011. Can you tell me what's missing, Sarah?
We were 2010, where she took in over $500,000 in 1 month and over just under, I think it was $4.5 million for the cycle. That's what's missing.
When it was, when it was adjusted, it was 3.5-ish. But, yeah, she took a, they happened to leave out that in 2010 she raised all that money. The interesting thing is in 2010 she raised all that money, but she only spent $244,000 on the general election campaign for the 2010 election. She raised in 2010 $469,000 online or through direct mail. In one quarter. So, interestingly, she raised more last year, almost double, more than double last year. Still the same percentage of money actually went to candidates. Most of the money didn't. This year, Palin donated $65,000 to 13 Republican members of Congress. This is almost like a gap who's who featuring Alan West of Florida, Sean Duffy. Sean, I'm underpaid Duffy of Wisconsin.
Oh, him.
She did donate to 13 Republicans in Congress, but she only gave them $5,000 apiece, the maximum one-time donation. So it's not like she's taking her Sarah Pack money and doing a lot of conservative advocacy.
I don't think that anyone who follows Sarah Palin expected her to spend that money on anyone but herself. Except for the people who give her the money.
That's exactly where the money has gone. You know, my question is this, are we seeing the beginning of the end? Like, I wrote my story tonight and I phrased it as her 15 minutes of fame are about up. She cannot either run for president or reinvigorate her brand in some way. If the fundraising dries up and stays dry, is this it for her as far as the political arena?
Well, the fans of Sarah Palin are making a big point that this was not a presidential PAC, and they think that if she announced that she was running, there would be a lot more donations and it would galvanize the Republicans behind her. I am not sure that that's true. I'm sure the elites in the Republican Party read the same polls that we read, and they know the truth that she can't win. No matter what she told Newsweek, that she can't win against President Obama. But I don't know that she's going away yet. I mean, it seems very clear that she's not getting any attention right now. And if she doesn't run for office, at some office, some political office, she's done as a celebrity and she's done as a politician. And so where will her money come from? I think she needs to continue making some pretense at being a politician.
Yeah, I think when you look at the whole pattern of the past year, you have the declining book sales, you have the TV reality show didn't do what she expected it to do for her personal image and her polling. You have the movie, you have the dwindling attendance at her book signings, at her paid speeches, the Tea Party thing she did in Wisconsin, where it was reported that Wisconsin protesters outnumbered the people that were there to support her. You just see a downward pattern there that I still don't think the media really covers enough. I think there's a lot of media outlets that still sell Sarah Palin as a viable conservative star.
and she really isn't.
Well, she has incredible media savvy, and look how she, you know, this unilateral form of communication where she gets to create the narrative about herself. Look at the Newsweek article that, you know, obviously was done with her permission. And when you get her permission, then it has to be this propaganda piece. Even on the, what was she on, Hannity last night, where she was
Hannity, yeah,
talking nonsense about how she doesn't think we need to raise the debt ceiling and she could get into office and you know, cut spending. Well, in 2008, she signed the state of Alaska's the largest operating budget in their history, $6.1 billion. So, and that's a continued pattern of hers. So it fascinates me that people, you know, in light of all of these facts, because that isn't new. I mean, McCain picked her. She already had a history in Wasilla of starting with a town that had a surplus and ending $19 to $20 million in debt. So here you have this history and huge earmarks for the city of Wasilla. And you have this history, but she was able to sell herself as a fiscal conservative. I mean, the Tea Party is supposed to represent fiscal conservatives, but how they can support her is beyond me. I don't...
Well...
It makes no sense, but she's been very, very good at getting that narrative out there and having the media repeat it because I'm not sure, you know, they don't have time to sit here and you know how these stories go. It's the story of the moment, and they don't have time to go research someone's past and look into all of these things to fact-check everything.
Cool. Speaking of the Tea Party, I really think that the money that the Palin people are expecting to flood in if she runs, especially from the Tea Party, a lot of that money's going to be split between her and Bachman. And if Bachman keeps looking strong, that money's going to Bachman.
I agree totally. I still can't. I'm sorry. When you say Bachman is doing well, it just blows my mind that our country has come to this point and that the Republican Party is in such disarray that their strongest candidate right now looks to be Michelle Bachman.
Well, it's good for those of us who want to make sure that the sanity wins out in the 2012 election. Because, I mean, nothing's going to drive people closer to the polls on election day than a Michelle Bachman Republican standard bearer. The interesting thing is, that Bachman is just a symptom of the intra-party warfare going on in the GOP. Romney is the establishment. Bachman is the outside. Even though Bachman's just as much of an insider, or even more than Romney, she's managed to present herself and package herself as the outside. But all this leaves, because Palin has taken this odd path where she's attacking all of it, all of this almost pushes her out of the discussion completely.
Because she's attacking everyone, you mean, or?
Because she just went, like, with her appearance on Hannity last night, she basically went after the entire Republican Party. She said on one hand, the debt ceiling has to be raised, but on the other hand, it has to be done in the non-McConnell. Republicans need to stand up, all Republicans. So she wants to be Ronald Reagan and reshape the party, but she has taken herself so far out of the political circle with her celebrity, with her quitting, with everything else, that I think she wants to be in there, but she's having a hard time getting back in. And then Bachman came in and just took her spot.
Well, Sarah Palin was never a good, she's very good media strategist, but she's never been a good political strategist, although that's separate from the way that she's managed to run and wait until, you know, everybody else has shot each other down, and then she steps in at the last moment and sort of the everyday common sense conservative savior. But I don't, she doesn't know how to do, when it comes time to govern, she doesn't know how to strategize. And we saw this in her record in Alaska. And the way she speaks, you know, as you just pointed out about other Republicans, it points out a lot of the problems that she had in Alaska. And I just see her as a perpetual backseat driver. It seems like she's always in that backseat, just griping away at what everyone is doing, sort of like Rush Limbaugh. I mean, maybe that's sort of the career path that she's heading down. The the loudspeaker who criticizes everyone and doesn't have to ever get in there and actually make things happen.
Yeah, I think accountability has always been her problem. It's always going to be her problem, and I think quitting. She'll never get past quitting in 2009.
I don't think she's going to overcome the blood libel moment, because up until then, most Americans thought she was just kind of a staffy hockey mom. If they didn't like her, it was because they thought she was not intelligent enough, but they didn't dislike her as a person. And, you know, those are the people who weren't paying attention in the 2008 campaign and didn't see the sort of hate that she incited at some of her rallies. But in that video, in the blood libel video, she came across, she was so angry, and clearly she could not hide the rage coming across at having anyone question the rhetoric that she had been using up until that point. And she continued to use that same rhetoric after that.
Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. I don't think the public is ever going to forget that.
Yeah, I think she's pretty much sealed her own fate. She's probably going to try to run for something sometime, but just because in order to keep the ATM of her followers distributing cash, she has to. But does she really want to? She has the ambition, but is she willing to sacrifice her fame to go back on a campaign trail? I'm not sure. As we know, we've stayed closer to within a half an hour tonight, but we're at about 33 minutes, so we're going to say you got 3 minutes of bonus coverage tonight, and this about does it. I want to thank Sarah Jones for once again coming on the program, our talented and outstandingly intelligent co-host. And until next time, I am Jason Easley saying good night, and we'll catch you later.